until finally, like I said, on the fifth day.
No, it was more like 2 weeks. Actually.
Okay. The 15th day, the second chord came. That second chord is very important, you know.
You know, Ed was the one who got the actress, or, you know, the model, that type of deal before Dave did, and I think that really kind of got under Dave's skin. Hey, this is Michael Anthony of Van Halen, and I am in the studio for Van Halen 2, about women and children first, and I am in the studio for Fair Warning.
The Van Halen story has now reached the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Part 20th century European immigrant saga, part 21st century all-American soap opera. Basically, there are a couple of ways to affect rock history. Be so hugely popular that you sell millions of albums, or be so influential and uniquely stylized over a long acclaimed career that you influence other musicians. In the case of the band Van Halen, they did both. Just as Led Zeppelin I had ushered in the first era of hard rock almost a decade before, the Van Halen debut in January 1978, featuring drummer Alex Van Halen, bassist Michael Anthony, singer David Lee Roth, and extraordinary guitarist Eddie Van Halen, set the next benchmark for hard rock, with electrifying energy, guitar-playing innovation, and a polish previously unheard of in this genre. Jan Van Halen, a professional sax and clarinet player, emigrated with his wife and two sons from the Netherlands in 1968, settling in Pasadena, California. First, Eddie, then Alex Van Halen in the studio.
Our parents wanted us to be classical pianists, like Vladimir Horowitz, you know, to be true, whatever. And at around the age of 12, you were 13, I was 12, yeah. Around there. We got into rock and roll, Beatles, Dave Clark 5. And I love Dave Clark 5, so we used to have the cardboard boxes.
Yeah.
And we used to bang on those things. And
The empty ice cream tubs that they used to have at 31 Flavors.
And also the model car boxes. Yeah. We'd leave some of the plastic in it to sound like a snare.
Yeah.
But, from there, we, obviously my mom and dad were pretty uptight that we kind of lost interest in piano, so they convinced Al somehow to take flamenco guitar lessons, which is still respectable. Okay, I bought myself a drum kit, $125 St. George Japanese drum set, paid by having a paper out. This is the way I remember it. While I'm out doing the paper job, Al was playing my drums, and he just got better. And drums came natural to him, whereas it was work for me. I just said, "Take my damn drums! I'll play your effing guitar," and he
won the deal because the guitar and the amp was worth about $350.
No,
the drums were worth about $125.
It was a Spanish guitar. It wasn't the one that we bought from Hans. No,
the Silvertone.
That's not when it happened. I never got that guitar. Mom and Dad got rid of it before I ever got a chance to get to that.
All right. Now here's my version.
No, I'm just saying. Guitar came natural for me and drums came natural for Al. So it was a logical thing.
When I played guitar, I could play the chords. I could read. I could do the strumming, the rest of the thing. But to me, there was no connection with the instrument. To me, it was just a piece of wood with vinyl strings on it. Ed picked up the guitar one time, and I just heard him.
Well, that's the problem. See, I put steel strings on it. No, yeah, I'm kidding.
But it didn't take a genius to hear that Ed had a connection with it. And it's that simple. And, of course, the part about the drum set and the paper route, sure, that was all true. But if it hadn't been for the fact that Ed had that connection with the guitar, it wouldn't have mattered.
If it hadn't been because he got better on the drums, I would have played his guitar.
There's no tomorrow, and all I've got, I had to
originally on their January 1978 debut, now included on the Best of Both Worlds double disc. That's Van Halen's remastered masterpiece, Runnin' with the Devil. Playing in a big-time professional rock and roll band with a sibling is by no means unique to Van Halen, but the shared experience of immigrating together from a foreign land at a tender age may have galvanized the bond between the Van Halen brothers, according to bass player and harmony singer Michael Anthony.
Working with Eddie, or playing music with Eddie and Alex, from the first time that I met them, you could tell that there was a bond between these two guys. And I mean, I have three brothers who have all played in bands, whatever, and one of my brothers, who's a year and a half younger than me, played drums in the first couple of bands that I was in, and it was like the first disagreement, boom, 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 and that's it. He's out of the band, and you know, and that's it. But on a musical level, Eddie and Alex have always had a bond that, even after knowing them and have been playing with them for over 20 years, it's still, there's still a part of it that I'll probably never be able to permeate, you know. It's just that bond that they have. But I'd like to consider myself one of their brothers too, but there is a strong bond between them. And I mean, I've never met any brothers that play together musically that have been as tight as Eddie and Alex.
Besides Eddie Van Halen's guitar pyrotechnics, the other sonic signature that Van Halen developed on their first outing with veteran producer Ted Templeman was those stacked harmony background vocals on the choruses, soon to be a Van Halen hallmark. Here's original lead singer David Lee Roth.
As a riff, it's designed to be the killer riff, but you pick up on all these vocal harmonies that come in on the choruses, you know, that come in on those B parts. That's my old Motown learning. You know, I went to grade school, junior high school that were 90%, 95% black and Hispanic, you know, when they started integrational busing over in Pasadena, California. But everything I was listening to at the youth club dance was Standing in the Shadows of Love. But that's where the harmonies come from. And that dates back to early Van Halen stuff when we had lead bass, drums, and me. And we were playing cover tunes in all the bars. We'd play 200 songs by other people, whether it was Elton John or the Ohio Players, James Brown, Led Zeppelin, you name it. But we had no keyboard. We had no pumping brass section, you know, and this kind of thing. So what are we going to do to add a little color to the chorus? We'll sing. Okay, a novel idea. Let's get some harmonies going here, which to this day is fairly rare in big rock sound. You'll hear a lot of vocals stacked up in unison. It's kind of a gang thing. We say we want wild. This kind of thing. But as far as 4 and 5 part harmonies and things like this, this is the Temptations played to the background of Heartbreaker by Led Zeppelin.
Keep talking about love. To wanna
originally on 1978's Van Halen debut. That's Ain't Talkin' 'Bout Love. Now on the Best of Both Worlds, Van Halen's double CD. The Van Halen brothers developed quite a reputation from Pasadena to the Hollywood Sunset Strip, playing the clubs and trying to attract a record deal. Meanwhile, they attracted the disdain of teachers and parents of other band members. Here's Alex and Eddie Van Halen.
No different than, I think, anybody else who is searching for something in their life when...
We never hurt anybody, put it that way.
Nothing was ever done maliciously, but Ed and I always had this whether it's a, what do you call it, itch or a desire or a need to express ourselves a certain way. And fortunately, we found music. And fortunately, it happened at an early age. And I think a lot of people can relate to that, because that's why some people turn to drugs, some people turn to violence, some people turn to football, whatever it is. You need to have some way to express yourself. And yeah, when we were in our so-called formative years, Ed and I used to get in some rumbles, you know, big deal. But when we finally got the band, what we thought was in a reasonable position of competence, if you want to call it that, and we used to play for the Hell's Angels. Remember those guys? You know, just sit there and hang around with a bunch of guys. I was just waiting to make a mistake, for having all those guys grab a chain and just wrap it around my neck and say, hey, you made a mistake.
Don't ever let me be. I only wanna be by your side. Please don't. guess I don't know what I'm to wear. Girl, you really got me now. Got me so I can't sleep at night.
One of the finest cover versions in rock history. You can even ask the man who wrote it and originally made it a hit the first time, Ray Davis of the Kinks. That's Van Halen's version of You Really Got Me. Coming up next, David Lee Roth reveals why the band used those stacked three-part harmonies like an instrument on their early albums. The answer may surprise you. I'm Red Beard, in the studio for Van Halen's The Best of Both Worlds, Part 1.
Hey, this is Michael Anthony.
Hi, I'm Alex Van Halen, and you're not.
Hey, this is Eddie Van Halen in the studio.
Yours truly, David Lee, right here with Redbeard.
In the studio for part one of Van Halen's The Best of Both Worlds, veteran producer Ted Templeman quickly developed a technique of thrusting tight three-part harmonies prominently forward in the choruses on those early Van Halen productions. It's a novel approach to hard rock. Original lead singer David Lee Roth confesses in the studio.
It's purely a case, Redbeard, of history for all the wrong reasons. All we were trying to do was cover up that we were too cheap to hire a keyboard player. All we did was try and cover up the idea that, no, we didn't want a rhythm guitar player, you know, and this sort of thing. So you got to give a little color, a little life. And there's so many things you can do with voices, but it's very difficult and it takes hundreds of hours of rehearsal, of repetition to get it right, to really make it zing, not sing, but zing, pop, fizzle, you know, like that. Most people, most musicians, singers, whatever out there have the facility to do it. It just takes literally hundreds of hours. And you really have to enjoy the music to get yourself through a program like that.
Oh,
originally from February 1979's Van Halen 2 album. Dance the Night Away is now included on the Best of Both Worlds double anthology. Lead singer David Lee Roth had an innate sense of showbiz that he stressed to the ever-so-casual Van Halen brothers.
From the very beginning, we just felt like, okay, Dave, if that was what you want me to wear, okay, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he used to rag my ass about the way I dressed.
So one day I wore a dress?
Yeah, he did. He wore a dress. Yeah.
Where?
Here.
To the studio.
Here.
Just in the studio.
Yeah, showed up in a dress. Yeah.
The worst part was driving. People see me. The thing you have to remember, in music, there is a creative side. There is the, what I guess we'll call the self-indulgent side, meaning how you want to express yourself. But there's also a side of other people, how they think you should appear. If you're going to play a wedding, you have to wear a tuxedo, or else you ain't getting the gig. It's that simple. At that time, people were so image conscious, or at least to a certain extent of how things should look, like you said, with the poofy hair and the rest of the stuff. And to be quite honest with you, even now, things have changed to the point where now people are trying so hard
not to
be something. They shave their heads. They pierce every part of their body they can imagine, you know. 10 years from now,
ugly is in.
No, know? I wouldn't say ugly,
well,
but
it's just
human nature. That's all it is.
But
it's very simple. Because the bottom line is, when
if you
were
close your eyes and listen to music, what's the damn difference?
When you were born, and when I were born, we didn't know about shirts or pants. We didn't speak the English language.
You didn't either.
But because
because
you hang with other people, you have to communicate, yeah. And certain people relate to certain ways, whether it's a dress or the language or the look. It's that simple. We were just jeans and t-shirts.
I recorded all first four records with that same blue shirt.
Smoking and drinking on ringside, on top of the world, oh yeah. She had a drink in her hand, she had her toes in the sand. Whoa, what a beautiful girl. I got a maid in the shade, and all I need is the woman.
Understand. For the sweet talking honey with a little bit of money, she turned your head around.
A creature from the sea with the looks to me like she liked to fool around.
Beautiful girl.
Beautiful Girls from Van Halen, originally on their 1979 sophomore effort, now on the Best of Both Worlds retrospective. Eddie Van Halen's guitar playing prowess was so immediately obvious that before their third release, Women and Children First, Eddie had already copped two consecutive Guitar Player of the Year awards. So it is ironic that he rocked the cradle in 1980 with a special effects-laden keyboard. Here are Eddie and Alex Van Halen.
2 weeks straight in Dave's father's basement. I got this Wurlitzer piano.
Through a Marshall amp.
Through my Marshall amps. And just every day, Al and I would go in there. Dum, bum, 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 dum, 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 bum, bum,
for hours.
Bum, for 2 weeks.
We just, for I'm hours. Going,
this is really cool.
But where's that next chord?
Yeah.
Where's that next chord?
Find that chord. Boom. Like the 15th day, yeah. There it came, and it just boom. Magic, you know. But we pounded that song
into the ground.
Yeah. Just that chorus riff for 2 weeks straight.
But what's great about
it... I just couldn't find where... I didn't know where to go from there. And all of a sudden, boom, it came.
What's great about it is it's like entrainment. You know, it's as old as shamans. It's as old as African drumming. It's as old as anything that people do to get themselves in a different state of mind. We would sit there and play that thing until we became almost hypnotic. And didn't realize what time it was. 5 hours would go by.
Oh, yeah.
And played the same damn thing. Until finally, like I'd said, on the fifth day.
No, it was more like 2 weeks. Alex.
Okay. The 15th day, the second chord came. That second chord is very important, you know.
Hits the street.
Van Halen, originally from 1980's Women and Children First, their third. Up next, Michael Anthony and Eddie Van Halen reveal the first hints of discord within Van Halen as the band hits its first patch of rough road on its way to superstardom. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Van Halen.
Hey, Michael Anthony here from Van Halen. Right now, I'm in the studio, and we are talking about Women and Children First.
And I'm Redbeard. The Van Halen 2 album eventually sold an amazing 5 million copies. The band quickly became one of the biggest concert draws, and their penchant for pushing the limits of rock star hedonism while on the road grew outrageous, according to Michael Anthony.
We weren't really thinking about the money at that time either, I don't think. I think we were just having so much fun doing what we were doing and being as new as we were to it that the money was, I mean, any kind of a paycheck I remember getting and seeing, I was going, whoa, what a trip, check that out, you know? it was like, hey, because, you know, it didn't take much to make me happier. You know, as long as I had a roof over my head, I didn't care. So, I mean, that to me was all icing on the cake. You know, they were letting us record and go out and play our music, and that's all we cared about.
The first hint of discord within Van Halen had nothing to do with music or career direction or money or the business. Here's Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah, I'd say starting songs. I met Valerie then, and Dave didn't dig that because all of a sudden here I am in the Globe and all of the rags, which right. is totally not me. You know, I mean, it's like...
It's not like you go out and try like, to get those pictures put
like,
in there.
Please leave me alone, you know? It's kind of like the fame part was coming to me, which I don't dig. I just want to make music, you know? And it's what he wanted, and it just... Great attention, yeah, it did.
The Valerie that Eddie Van Halen referred to is TV actress Valerie Bertinelli. So suddenly, instead of Ed being on the cover of Guitar Player magazine, Eddie's now on the covers of National Enquirer and all the tabloids. Interestingly, Michael Anthony's marriage around the same time went relatively unnoticed.
I got married in 81, actually 2 months before Ed got married. It was so weird because, you know, it's funny too because we just finished... our tour, Kenny Wayne Shepherd opened up much of the summer for us, and it was his father, actually, who was a DJ or something like that in the Shreveport area that was partly instrumental in hooking Valerie up to come to our show when she first met Ed. I remember him walking up to him going, hey, thanks a lot, man, you know, making some kind of a joke out of it. But, yeah, I think it was Valerie's brother who went to him or something like that, and... got it set up for her to come backstage to our show in Shreveport and meet Ed. And after the show, I remember she came back to the hotel and they just kind of like were walking around and I think they talked almost all night. Meanwhile, I met two of Valerie's brothers and we proceeded to trash half the hotel we were staying in. I mean, as far as I was concerned, I was going, hey man, she's got a couple of great brothers. You know, we were having a great time. But, you know, I think out of anybody in the band, it hit Dave the hardest because I think, you know, Ed was the one who got the actress, you know, the model, that type of deal before Dave did. And I think that really kind of got under Dave's skin.
We'll be right back.
I like the way the line runs up the back of the stockings. I've always liked those kind of high heels too, you know. No, don't take them off. Don't take, leave them on. Yeah, that's it. A little more to the right.
Always a concert highlight with the original band, that's Van Halen from 1980's Women and Children First album, with Everybody Wants Some, now included on the Best of Both Worlds Van Halen double disc. Those rumors of road rock debauchery were confirmed by the official title of Van Halen's 1981 tour, enough to even now make Michael Anthony blush.
Or is that the hide your sheep? Oh, I remember. We had jackets and we had T-shirts made up. In fact, I've still got one somewhere of a sheep with its head. It's facing away from you with its head turned around looking, and it's wearing garters and fishnet stockings. And I think that was more for our crew, because back then, believe me, it was like every other week. It looked like the free clinic backstage with a line coming out of a room about a half mile long. The doctor in there seeing half our crew, and they're all walking out shaking their heads.
Ooh.
Oh, it was a ravenous time. There was a lot of debacle stuff going on.
By the spring of 1981, Eddie Van Halen was struggling through recording the Fair Warning album. Was it recording company pressure to create a hit single? Naivete about the business? The ravages of drugs and alcohol consumption? Again, Michael Anthony.
Yeah, I think it was probably a little bit of everything. Like that. I mean, because those were times also where he would spend a lot of time in the studio, him and Don Landy. Sometimes, you know, they'd pull all-nighters or stay up for like 2-3 days. And, you know, I just think it was just kind of a combination of everything, plus the ongoing, the thing that was starting to grow with our relationship and between us and Roth, which would eventually come to a head during the 1984 tour. I think, you know, that was part of it also. That plus the fact, you know, Ted Templeman and, you know, the wanting to do remakes of songs and Ed wanting to do his own thing. And I remember the first time Ed even got on a keyboard and showed something to Dave, and Dave was like, oh, no, you can't do that. You're a guitar hero. Guitar heroes, you play guitar. You don't play keyboard, man. You are a guitar hero. Do not play keyboard. And, you know, that frustrated him also because, you know, it wasn't like a conscious thing that, hey, we ought to add keyboard or whatever. But, you know, it was just another facet of Ed Van Halen. That guy, since the first day I met him, he's always goofing around with different instruments, trying to make, you know, or coming up with different sounds. And, you know, not because he's searching for something, but because he enjoys doing it. And I think, you know, it was just a combination of everything. Plus, like, you know, there was some substance abuse, you know, within the band. Back then, too, but I think it was just kind of a culmination of all that.
And then there's the fact that then-lead singer, lyricist David Lee Roth, never quite clicked with Eddie Van Halen's bride, Valerie Bertinelli.
Right, yeah, you could always feel the tension in the room when those two either were talking with each other or, you know, I mean, they got along, you could tell, they got along, and, you know, I know Dave was also doing it for Ed's sake, you know, you didn't want any tension within the band, but you could tell that, you know, that something wasn't right there. That, and plus, Valerie, she's very opinionated and very strong-willed. And, you know, she would say, if she didn't think that something was right, let's say if Dave had Ed wearing something or whatever, she'd go, Ed, I don't think that looks right. You know, you ought to tell Dave and whatever. And up to that point, you know, we had been pretty passive with Dave as far as a lot of things concerning the band, like the interviews, stuff like that. And all of a sudden, it's like Ed was going, hey, Dave, you know, I don't think blah, blah, blah. And it's like, ooh. And I think, and Dave knew that Valerie was a part of that. And I think that made the tension even worse.
Particularly difficult to make and then underappreciated 1981 album Fair Warning, that's the incredible Unchained, remastered now for the Best of Both Worlds retrospective. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this.